From the second floor of the Duncan Student Center, we welcome you to another episode of Five for Fighting Irish. I don't know if the sound is right. It's always hard, so hard to tell. Thankfully, our tech assistant slash legal analyst, Jacob Irons, is on the scene, as is Ryan Murphy, as is Tyler Reedy. I just hear static in my ears right now, so that's not a good sign. I'm not sure. Cause that, I think usually, yeah. That's not. Nope, sounds weird. Wait, is it? No, it's not because I forgot to turn the AV air off.
Can you hear that now?
No, nothing changed.
Nothing changed.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Wow, that was
That was deep.
That was really deep. That was the kind of mood I needed this morning.
Well, I can hear Ryan talking like
you can hear me
clearly. Somewhat, yeah, I think.
What
me. I'm muted. Mm-hmm. Ruh-roh. That's trouble, folks.
If Jacob Irons doesn't know,
yeah, then we're screwed. Does that sound bad? Yeah, I think I'm moving now. Right? Maybe. Potentially. Maybe. I think, maybe. We've somehow gained a listener since this show has started. Oh, yeah, I can definitely hear myself now.
Our diehard listener.
I do still hear the static, I think, but I think I can hear myself.
Keep talking, Andrew.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Kind of faint.
Hello. Yeah. I don't know. It's showing up on the system. Like, it's working fine, I feel like. Tyler, how are you?
Doing all right. Oh, I can't hear myself at all.
So. Oh, yeah. I don't hear you either.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is just an electric start. Yeah.
This is beyond me.
Say something again.
Hello, hello. Maybe, potentially. All right, folks. We have just a great start today. And it's nothing. Our start is nothing. Oh, yeah, that's weird. Yeah, the system here is not showing up particularly well, it seems like, for some reason. We're trying to get things sorted out. Maybe that's why the computer was off, Jake. Yeah, we definitely have some technical difficulties, folks. Yeah, not really sure what's happening right now, and it's really hard to fill dead air when you have a sore throat. I was already planning on being the top, or I'm trying to think of like who's like a good like third person on like a line like that. I was planning on being the 2014-15 Michael Roffel to my co-host 2014-15 Claude Giroux and Jake Voracek. He had 21 goals that season though, so he was
respectable.
Good. I miss Rafi.
My mic is not scoring 21
yeah,
goals right now, it seems.
Why is it muted? I don't know how to flip it over.
Is that the internal PC right now? Alright, we're going to put the music back on for now, and hopefully we'll be back soon.
It's remains, but how much loneliness can a man take till he tries to take the rain? But when I've got you in the corner of my eye, all my moments are the same when they are mine. I saw you twice before, now I really wanna see.
I hear the music. I don't. You can?
I hear you. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because I can hear myself.
Yeah, we're good here now.
The only person I can't hear is Andrew.
Oh, until I was muted.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
All right, let's ride.
Don't know what Giants did, but he's a magician.
Jacob Irons, folks. Write that name down.
Yeah.
Write it. Memorize it. Make sure you never forget it. He is the reason why we are finally starting this show.
Five for fighting to get on air.
Which is going to be late anyway because I am atrocious at waking up in the morning.
Aren't we all, though? Like,
I mean, you guys were here on time. I was the one who was running late.
On time.
Well, more on time than me, anyway. But yeah, we're back. Jake wants
our
to get in on
our technical producer slash legal analyst slash rules analyst slash
wants to call in.
He deserves it after what he's done. He hops in over there in the producer studio. But yeah, we're back. Andrew McGinnis, Tyler Murphy, Ryan.
Tyler Murphy, all Ryan right. Reedy. We're just going to switch personalities for the day.
Can we just do that? If we waste some money, say things over again. Not the first time this week, actually. We've been together for something hockey related. We were at that panel last night that was hosted by the Nanovic Institute in McKenna Hall with Peter Stasny, Anton Stasny, a couple other players from the Soviet bloc who played hockey and some defected to come to the NHL. Obviously very familiar with the Stasny brothers, of course. I mean, that was, I got to say, that was one of the coolest events I think Notre Dame's had in a while, really.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I felt proud to go to a school that like could invite those guys and put something like that on. It was really cool. And I don't know about you guys, but the question about like Russian NHL player participation, I thought was like for me the most interesting by and far question to see them weigh in on, and the way that they all both supported the IIHF banning Russian and Belarusian athletes. And then also, you know, advocating the NHL do the same. I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah, it was a really cool event to go to. Just hearing about what it took and the difficulties that, you know, you don't really recognize. Because, I mean, you see these players come into the league and you celebrate their abilities, you celebrate their skills, but you often overlook what it took for them to get here. And you know, in the case of all four of these players defecting at the time of the Cold War, you have to leave everything behind. And, you know, for, let's say, a player like, I think it was Peter or Anton, you know, you hear from your family that if you come back, you're going to spend a few years in jail.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting hearing about Peter's story and actually serving in the parliament, getting involved in politics after your time in hockey is done and going back to your home country.
What an incredible guy.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I
mean,
did not know that part.
All four of them, just really... really fascinating viewpoints on history and the intertwinement of sports and politics and even what things might look like now and how they might need to change going forward with the situation between Russia and Ukraine. And it was a very, very well spent Thursday evening there.
Some great Quebec Nordiques.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a very cool event. So shout out to everyone who was a part of planning that. A lot of people there too. Obviously, I'm sure a lot of hockey fans.
Place is packed.
Yeah, I know. It was,
they had to build out extra seats
for
people.
Sellout crowd, standing room only. But yeah,
great to see.
Great to see that type of event as well. And you know, it's one of many big hockey events happening this weekend. We have that, obviously, this show, and following a close third, guys, it's Michigan weekend.
Yeah, you know. It's all building up to the two games this weekend. It's three exciting events. Obviously, this radio show is, you know, hard to top, but
yeah.
I think the Michigan series might.
Murph, I think
might
you might want to.
Hello, Jacob.
Hello,
Irons.
Murph. I might want to peak that belief down a little bit. We just spent 15 minutes trying to get on air there.
Well, that's just, you got to keep waiting in anticipation. That's all.
Ah, anticipation.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Props to Giants, our technical producer, for getting us on air,
and marketing director,
director, and legal analyst.
Just here for the show, guys. Alrighty, I'll go over to my studio and do my work. But just wanted to chime in. Good luck, guys. I'll be listening.
Thank you, Giants.
Thank you, Jake. And, you know, obviously, it's a big weekend for this Notre Dame hockey team. And if you guys haven't done already, make sure to check out Ryan Murphy's not one, not two, but no, actually just
actually
two.
Just two.
Very high-quality articles setting the stage for this weekend. One of them, just a preview of the series. And then another one, a really great feature of the best player in Notre Dame hockey. Maybe the best player in the world, honestly.
Certainly drafted by the best NHL team, yeah, in your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, hey, they had like 50 shots on Cole last night. They got a point. Dang it, let's go. Cole Knubel, who got his first collegiate goal a couple weekends ago. He's been playing well, it seems like, for most of the year. The points haven't necessarily come as quickly as maybe he would have hoped, but obviously a winding journey to being drafted in the NHL last year in the fourth round by the Flyers. Obviously the son of longtime NHLer Mike Knubel, and he is fired up for this weekend series, just like the rest of his teammates, and I'm sure both of you guys.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan week, it's always special. I mean, you know, and Cole's cool because he's got that connection with his dad who went to Michigan. I mean, he's got a lot of connections with his dad. His dad played for the Flyers. Am I correct in that?
You are correct.
And then he was drafted by the Flyers.
Yeah, two separate stints in Philly, actually. Yep. One scored a double overtime playoff winner.
Very special as well. So great to talk to him and just really, really excited for this weekend.
Yeah, and Michigan needs something to happen here because this is the end of the line for them as far as the first half of the season goes. And the whole story so far with Michigan, and same deal with Minnesota to an extent, is, you know, they're just kind of sitting around, splitting series, not really upholding the top five ranking we bestowed upon them at the start of the season. As a result, we've seen Michigan drop all the way down to 13 after battling St. Cloud State last week. So Michigan's going to come in here, I would think, with a sense of urgency. Notre Dame's obviously got to do the same after the stinker on home ice last week with Boston College. But, I mean, hey, you brought it up to me last week. Great point you made, Murph, that last time Notre Dame got shellacked on home ice, they went unbeaten in a 7 in a row to follow it up. So we'll see if it happens again. Obviously, you'll have the holiday break to potentially split something like that up. But, yeah, Michigan at home this weekend. Michigan State, who's really emerging as a top team in the Big Ten, on the road next weekend. It's another one of those important stretches to wrap up early part of December here.
Yeah, Irish currently sitting 3 points ahead of Michigan in the Big Ten standings. Would obviously love to extend that margin throughout this weekend. The big story, I think, is going to be Michigan's offense and how much they're able to produce this weekend. They have been this strong suit for this Wolverines team. They're sitting third in the nation in goals per game. Notre Dame is scoring more than they did last year, I'd say, but definitely not the offensive juggernaut that Michigan can be at its peak, even with some key pieces out this weekend for the Wolverines like Rucker McGroarty. What do we think the Irish need to do in order to, you know, try to limit the opportunities for the Wolverines?
Well, I think the special teams is going to be really interesting because Michigan's really good on the power play, but their penalty kill stinks. It's atrocious. So they're total polar opposites. For Notre Dame, like, stay out of the box, you know, because it could be a very, very easy to win the special teams edge if, you know, you're on the power play more than Michigan is, just that simply because Michigan's penalty kill is not bad. Now, Notre Dame is that bad, but Notre Dame's power play isn't, you know, spectacular. But if they can just stay out of the box and not even run the risk, I know they have a good penalty kill, but not even run the risk of letting Michigan's power play hurt them, it could be a big boost.
Got to tighten up defensively, too. Yeah, you're exactly right with that, Murph. I think one of the big reasons that BC game turned the way it did into a 6-1 loss is a little bit of a lack of discipline, and you brought up mental toughness in the middle of that second period where the penalties just started to pile up, and you can't put that skilled of a team on the power play 5-on-3. And the same goes for Michigan with their skill level as well. But defensively, Notre Dame's got to clean it up a little bit. Turnovers, I wouldn't say, haven't been as big of an issue this year, but last week it was more of a positioning thing, and it was just keeping the areas clean in front of Ryan Bischel and, you know, not letting players get behind you, not letting passes get through where they probably shouldn't, and, you know, just clogging up lanes better than Notre Dame did last week. I think it's going to be a big role. Let Ryan Bischel do his thing. Let him make the saves that he's supposed to make, and, I mean, Coach Jackson agreed heavily in the post-game presser last week. We left him out to dry, and that can't happen again, because as we saw in Ann Arbor last year, he'll get it done for you. He'll single-handedly win a Michigan game if you need him to.
Yep.
So. Yeah, I think the start's going to be a big key for Notre Dame as well, and we've seen in both those games, Notre Dame just hasn't been able to really survive, like, the first period.
Yeah.
Was it BC that had the 5 goals, or was that BU?
I think that was BU that had the five goal first.
The 5 goal first period. Looking back to Notre Dame's game last year, or two games at home against Michigan last year, went down 1-0 about 3 minutes into both games. We're down 2-0 actually in the first period of the game. They came back and won in overtime against Michigan. And then in the other game, they tied it late in the first period and gave up a goal in the first minute of the second and never recovered. So I think that's a big thing for this Notre Dame team. Once they settle into their structure, they're really hard to beat, but they can be sloppy early in games.
No, I think that's a great point. And obviously getting off to a strong start for Notre Dame would be, you know, important. I don't feel like that's necessarily something this team has done a lot this season. I don't know if you guys disagree. But yeah, getting off to a strong start will be important. I think for Notre Dame, just kind of last week against BC, it did feel like, as you kind of alluded to, Tyler, like it just felt like they weren't getting the breaks, and eventually then they crumbled after that, you know, missed interference call that led to the third Boston College goal. If you don't let things like that beat you against Michigan, obviously it'd be great, and you know you need a little luck to win. But if they're not getting the breaks like they weren't against Boston College, you know, to respond to that with a bit more mental toughness, I think will be important. Because Michigan's, I mean, they're a really good team and they're really deep, right? They're going to keep coming at you in waves. So to be able to respond every shift is going to be important.
Yeah, and as far as expectations go, I mean, you obviously can't expect a sweep. But what I want to see from Notre Dame here is, you know, something similar to what happened in Ann Arbor to end the season last year. Put yourself in a position where you can win both games. Because yeah, we saw it on home ice when Michigan came in last season. You know, you won game two in overtime, but game one was a complete washout. They dominated you from start to finish. And if Notre Dame can hang around in both games, and you know, even if it means maybe going to overtime once or twice and not getting the result, then I think that's something to be satisfied about. Just put yourself in a position to win both games.
Maybe don't give up like 50 shots a game.
Yeah. Oh, that's been a lot better this year so far. But we'll see. We'll see.
I just think the most exciting part of this series is, you know, and again, this is something you alluded to, Tyler, but it really feels like it could be an inflection point for both teams. Yeah. Obviously, we won't know until the end of the season looking back. But going in, you know, with Michigan at the end of their first half that hasn't been up to expectation, to say the least, and Notre Dame with you know, it's a chance to respond from last weekend, but it's like a reasserting themselves that they're for real. I think the three of us all kind of feel like they're for real. They've proven that so far, but they can really do so this weekend with a strong performance. And Notre Dame always gets up for Michigan weekend. They just find a way to. Even last year at home, when honestly I didn't think they played their best, they still were able to salvage that win in overtime and didn't get swept out of their home barn. So really, really exciting.
Give me an X factor for this series this weekend that isn't Ryan Bischel, because that's too easy.
That is too easy. You're absolutely right. The other guy I feel like is too easy is Landon.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you have to bring him up.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with the third line. I'm gonna go with the line of Brendan Ali and Hunter Strand, and who's the right wing on the
Silly?
Line? Silanoff.
Yeah.
I think they gotta be good, and honestly, they might have to produce a little bit more than they have this year in order to combat Michigan's depth of scoring. So give me the third line. They're my X factor.
Yeah, I'll take Drew Bavaro. Andrew, you mentioned, or Ryan, you mentioned the importance of the power play for Notre Dame. I mean, he's the ringleader of that as far as defensemen go. Notre Dame's always looking to set up that big one-timer at the top, and we've already seen it result in a couple goals this year. Been a little bit quieter over the last few weeks as conference play has ramped up, but in addition to Bischel, he was the star of that second Michigan series last year with the two-goal game on Saturday night plus the overtime winner to secure home ice. So I'll be looking for him. I'll be, as I said, looking for the defense as a whole to play a tighter game and maybe set things up offensively. And if you're talking about defense and offense, he's that guy. So we'll see.
He was going to be my pick as well. So
even a guy like, you know, like a Henry Nelson or a Michael Master Domenico, though.
Yeah,
like those guys got to be good this weekend.
Yeah, Notre Dame's second, third, and fourth leading scorers are all defensemen. Behind Landon, it's Nelson, Seed, and Bavaro. And Bavaro, Barbaro is second on the team in goals with 4.
I didn't realize Nelson was up there. Wow.
Yeah, 10 assists.
He's played sneaky well easily the last the 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure Islanders fans are excited about that. I'm going to go with the Janicki brothers, I think, Trevor and Justin. I think there's more to give for both those guys. Obviously, I'm sure Jacob Irons is going to come running in any second to hype up Justin. But, you know, only 5 goals between both those guys. They're both shooting under 8.5%, so you figure there's some regression due there. Obviously, both of them have some big game experience, especially Trevor. They've played in this rivalry quite a few times before. They know what it's about. So I'm going to be looking for those two guys, I think, to really step up and come in with some key goals and just general playmaking for this Irish team. All right, let's end this segment with predictions. Split, sweep, or get swept?
Split.
I'm such a terrible optimist. So you know my heart. I can't pick a sweep, but my heart wants to say they take 4 points or more.
Okay.
So I don't think it's going to be an even 3-3. I'm gonna go for Notre Dame gets at least 4. That'll be my prediction.
If they win in overtime, is that 2 points? Is that how it works? So it'd be 5. Okay.
Yes, and if they lose in overtime, they get a point as well.
I knew that part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna be optimistic too. I'm saying they get at least 5.
Okay. I like where McGinnis is going.
Win both games, but I think maybe one's going to overtime.
Okay, I like that.
I like that. Also biased. Okay. All right. Any other college hockey storylines you guys want to bring up? Or are we at transition time?
North Dakota plays Denver tonight.
Yep. Big non-conference game. Yep. Out west, North Dakota, Denver, and out east, Maine, New Hampshire.
There you go.
Exciting.
The former Flyers Bowl there. Dave Hackstall against Bobby Brink. And also Chris Vandevelde on the Hackstall side. All right, gentlemen. We talked about the Islanders, obviously Danny Nelson's team, and they just had me one of the teams on today's Puckdoku.
Good transition.
Yes, smoothless.
Smooth.
Smooth. Jeez.
Smoothless.
That's a word, folks.
It's now.
It's 9:30. Give me a break. I'm very excited for next semester when we hopefully get a better time for this show.
Yes.
And I don't have to wake up at 8, and by 8, I mean roll out of bed at 8:35. So going from left to right on the horizontal side, we have Coyotes, Sabres, and 100 plus career goals. And then going vertically, we have the Islanders, Blues, and the Kings. All right, we can start off. We can go Andrew Ladd for Coyotes, Islanders.
Former Blackhawks. Andrew Ladd. There we go.
Oh, 25%. That's not good. But there was a new little slide in animation when you put the player in, so that's cool.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Oh, I want to try to
Islanders Sabres is easy.
You're gonna say Okpozo, aren't you?
I don't want to, but that came to mind immediately.
I'm going Thomas Vanek.
Okay,
4%.
Right.
He's a good one for Puckdoke. I use him a lot. You can actually see the I've used him more. I've used him 10 times. I don't even know if that counts me just using him. Most of anyone other than Yaro Halak. I also use Curtis Lazar a lot. Islanders, 100 plus career goals. Let's go with an ND guy. Let's go with Kyle Palmieri.
I put Dennis Potvin for 1%.
Bro, I'm surprised it's only 1%.
Yeah.
For Blues, 100 plus career goals, I'm going with someone whose jersey I saw in NDH yesterday. Former Flyer, Braden Schenn, 3%.
I'm going to go with Pat LaFontaine for...
La 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 Fontaine.
21%. That's not bad. I just wanted. I pretty much just wanted you to say that.
Why did you go with LaFontaine? You could have called me like so many people. You could have called me like Jeff Skinner.
Because la 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 Fontaine.
That's true. Rest in peace. Kings 100 plus career goals. Let's go with another former Flyer here. Vinny LeCavalier, 0.7%. The late career stint. You love to see it.
That's cash money right there.
Yeah. Could go Ryan Miller for Sabres Blues. I wonder if there's a better one. Oh, Steve Ott.
Steve Ott, former Montreal Canadian Steve Ott.
He's with he has a Habs jersey on his little picture.
I think he might have retired a Hab.
2%.
Which is hilarious.
Blues, Coyotes. There's definitely someone here. Oh, yeah. I can use him again, too. Yes, what is he? He is my sixth... Tied for 5th most used player, and he's about to be tied for 4th. Another former Flyer and an absolute legend. It's Tyler Pitlick, 1%.
Wow.
Ain't no party like a Pitlick party, baby. I miss him.
Andrew is Andrew. You are rocking this right now.
Other than Andrew Lash, I'm trying to think of a better one there, for Coyotes Islanders.
What do we have left?
Sabres, Kings, and Kings Coyotes. Okay. You definitely go with Sean Durzi for the first one.
That's the obvious one.
Ooh, that's the one I was
actually
thinking
of. I have a good one here. I think here he was very briefly a King, and he's 8%. I thought he might be a little lower. Darcy Kemper.
Wow.
Very briefly a King.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was a King at all.
Yeah. Between Minnesota and Arizona. Arizona got him for basically nothing. That's where he broke out, obviously. Wow. Yeah. And then the last one, Sabres Kings. I'm trying to think here. Dustin Penner wasn't a Sabre, right? No, he was not. I don't think. He was definitely a King, but I don't think he was a Sabre. I think Christian Ehrhoff was a King.
I think he was.
I got him. Yeah, Christian Ehrhoff works at 6%. I honestly thought he would be a little lower. So, yeah, I had a 50 score, 25%, half of which was Andrew Ladd.
Half of which was Andrew Ladd.
Yeah, let's see.
Blame it on Andrew Ladd.
He was the most guessed player for that category.
That surprises me.
Who would you have said?
I don't know.
Exactly.
That's a good point. There are not many Islander Coyote crossovers.
Exactly. All right. Solid Puck Doku Day. We usually don't finish at 2, so I'm happy that we got it all done.
I was
going
to say, yeah, whipped through that.
Yeah, I know. That was quick. Also, something that was quick was Corey Perry's tenure with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Shoo!
Yeah, if you didn't hear the news, Perry was pulled from warm-ups, I think it was last week, and then it was and his contract terminated a couple days ago. If you think you know the reason why it was terminated, you don't. the rumors around about him being involved with Connor Bedard's mom, not true, very not true. And like, I know it's frustrating for people that we don't know the specifics of it, because obviously something happened. Perry released a statement yesterday, but it's not responsible to or fair to Bedard or Perry or anyone else to perpetuate that stuff. So
no, it's one of the most bizarre, bizarre things that I think I've seen in a while. And the fact
and
that's
saying something for the NHL, folks.
And it's saying something for the internet.
Yeah, that too.
This is totally a product. All that was totally a product of the internet, and people were like, "Haha, this is so funny. We're going to continue to run with it until it actually picked up steam." You know, yeah, just weird, really weird.
I have no idea where it started too.
No
when
idea.
I tried like Twitter searching it, and like usually you can find like some like a pretty like consistent like origin source.
Well, it started with the mom's trip.
Well, yeah, I know that was part of it. And there was that clip that was showing, like, Bedard saying after he won, like, the player of the game necklace or whatever, like, the moms are going to love this. But, like, that happens for every mom's
yeah,
and dad's
no,
trip.
No, it's just, it's people wanting to make a story, you're right. But,
yeah.
I'm just glad we
people
know.
People wanting to make memes.
Yeah, I'm glad it seems that we're
and,
on
and
the.
And not thinking about, like, the real life impact they're having on people.
Yep. Well, I'm just glad it seems that we're on the backsides now. And another thing a lot of people didn't realize is this is not the same organizational structure from the Blackhawks that handled, or should I say mishandled, the Kyle Beach situation a few years back. This is a different organization now, and I think they did about as well as they could with what they were given here. I mean,
I think the
investigation was quick, it was thorough, and Corey Perry is no longer part of the league. So.
And he was pulled right away from warm-ups, too. Yeah, I think a lot of people expect, like, or have, like, a higher standard now for the Blackhawks because of the Kyle Beach situation for stuff like this, which is, I understand, certainly. I think everyone does, but as you said, it is a different, you know, management structure. Different people in place than that, certainly, and obviously this was handled much better than that, to say the very least. We also had a coach firing over this past week. Dean Evason of the Minnesota Wild staying in the Central Division. Wild kind of quietly, very underachieved this season. You know, they've been consistently one of the better teams in the West the last 3 years, really going back to the Kaprizov's rookie season. Currently sitting right now at 7-10-4. They have won two straight since the firing. They're seventh in the Central, ahead of only Chicago. Obviously still early, but they felt like they needed to make the switch. What are your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it probably was time. You know, I feel for Dean Evason, who by all accounts was a pretty good guy and did a pretty good job in Minnesota. But yeah, this was one that didn't really surprise me. It just felt like, you know, felt like Minnesota sort of stuck in stagnation. Interesting that, you know, it's now the first day of December and we've already had two coach firings.
Yep.
I feel like that's a little out of the norm, but Edmonton surprised me. Minnesota, maybe a little less so. The guy they brought in, John Hines, too, that did surprise me a little more.
Yeah, it just feels, was a little bit uninspired.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's an uninspired choice, and it's like, oh, let's spin the wheel of former NHL coaches and
yep, see where it lands.
See where it lands.
But yeah, Dean Evason took over on an interim basis late in the 2019-20 regular season. A stellar record, 147-77-27. Mm. His arrival basically coincided with the Wild taking that leap from mediocrity into a legitimate playoff team and a team that's looked like a contender the last few years. But just hasn't been able to get past the first round of the playoffs despite being around a 100-point team. And part of that reason for that is something that Dean Evason certainly has no control over, which is that $14 million dead cap penalty, closer to $15 million, actually, for Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, which is certainly something you can't blame the coach for.
No, you can't. And I'm glad you mentioned the stagnation and the fact that Minnesota's just kind of been spinning its wheels in the postseason because, I mean, last year, this was a team that was right at the top of the Central Division competing with teams like Dallas, as I think we've got a caller.
oh, boy. I wonder who that could be.
But, yeah, three straight first-round exits, that's not going to get it done, and it's a little reminiscent of what we talked about with the Edmonton firing a few weeks back. You know, you've been in this position for long enough now that you think you will have a way or can figure out how to move on past this first round, but just hasn't happened yet for Minnesota.
All right, let's see if I did this correctly. Is our caller able to speak? Caller. Maybe. I turned the phone. Oh, wait, the volume's not up. Maybe now? Caller? Are
Andrew?
Yes!
Hello. Okay.
Hold on. Who is this?
Hi, this is Jake from Connecticut.
Oh,
long-time
hi, Jake.
Listener. Very
not first-time caller, though.
I did call last week. I just wanted to put out, and I just saw something that was put out on the NBC Wire that I thought was really interesting, was the fact that...
Is Mike ever coming back?
No. Damn. NBC is promoting this hockey game on Peacock through the NBC PR account. They wrote up a full bio, which is very unlike their normal hockey slate for this game. I just thought you guys would be interested to know.
Okay.
Let.
We've already got known back-to-back sellouts for this series, so, hey.
They even posted
publicity.
A graphic on Twitter.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah, you don't see that very often from them.
And that's exactly, that's what I'm saying. I think this shows to speak how much this weekend series can mean both for the Irish and for the Wolverines, as well as college hockey on Peacock in general.
Yeah, and it's pretty good timing for a Michigan series because, I mean, just the University of Michigan right now is already a big talking point in the sports world with the game last week and now the Big Ten championship tomorrow night.
Is this the biggest
night.
Michigan sports event of the weekend?
Well, yeah, obviously.
The people are talking.
Notre Dame very
honestly,
well.
If you could low-key say it is just on the basis of even if they somehow lost to Iowa, they'd still make the playoff.
Notre Dame very well Maybe. Could score more points tomorrow night than the Iowa football team. Just saying.
I'd be honestly kind of surprised if they don't.
And Iowa will win. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3-2 is not just a hockey score.
Ah, no, interesting. That's off topic. I won't talk about the Iowa punt hype video that I'm very enthusiastic about.
What?
No, this is good for Notre Dame. I mean, Michigan's got a big college sports fan base. I mean, they'll if Michigan hockey is on, people will watch it. You know, they're one of the most iconic college hockey programs for a reason. So good to see. I think if you're Notre Dame, you like to see NBC sticking their necks out there for you. Which now that they put money on the line.
Exactly. Does it have to do that they just re-up for 7 years right now?
It might.
maybe a little bit.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Just thought I would let you know.
Thank you, caller number one.
Yeah.
I mean, Jake.
All right. Love having Jake in. If anyone else wants to call in, any of our four listeners, 574-631-6400. You can do it.
You can speak to us.
Yes. I mean, granted, all of you probably have our contact information already, so you can just speak to us that way. But still. We also had a couple transactions this week in the NHL. Speaking of something we don't usually see, a free agent signing in the fall. Patrick Kane, formerly of Chicago, now
what's that look on your face, Tyler? What's
Alex
that look
DeFrancis
on your face?
In Detroit, and Tyler Reedy is just thrilled.
I miss them. I do. Well, yeah, the Blackhawks let go of Alex DeBrincat too quickly, but that's another conversation for another time. But I mean, this would hurt a lot more 10 years ago when Detroit was still kind of a big rivalry, but since the conference split up with Chicago staying in the West, Detroit moving to the East, it's kind of, tensions have dissolved a little bit. Obviously, there's still an original six component there, and it's still pretty regional as far as that goes. But I mean, I'm happy for Detroit. I'm glad this is happening to them instead of, say, St. Louis or something, because, I mean, Detroit's been through the ringer the last few years with how poor some of those teams have been. But, yeah, I mean, it'll take some getting used to. Hopefully there's an even better version of Patrick Kane already in Chicago, but good for them. Kane and DeBrincat united again will be fun to watch. Patrick Kane has already been on record saying that he's going to be better than he was. I don't know if that means last year or better than he was in Chicago. That doesn't necessarily seem attainable, but coming off an injury, we'll see if he can return to some of his former glories with the Wings.
Yeah, I had a Red Wings fan friend of mine text me and after the news, and he said, "We've become everything we swore to destroy." And I was like, yeah, you know, it's going to be weird to see him in a Wings jersey. It just is. Like, when you see Patrick Kane in red, it was a little strange to see him in a Rangers jersey. But you see him in red, you think Blackhawks, and it's going to be strange to see him in Detroit. You know, no risk signing, I think, for the Red Wings. You know, I think it was a prorated $2 million deal or something like that. Maybe a little bit over $2 million. I like the signing. Why not? I think Detroit's in a really interesting spot where they're not, like, rebuilding anymore, but they're not, like, fully there. They have a lot of, like, older veterans. So we'll see. But a sign that Detroit really wants to compete this year.
Yeah, Red Wings currently at 12-7-3. That puts them fourth in the Atlantic, the second wild card team currently in the NHL. Do we think this is the year the Red Wings end the second longest active playoff drought in the NHL, longer than every team other than Buffalo? And if so, how much of a role does Patrick Kane play in that? Because you look at the players who have had the type of hip resurfacing surgery that he's had, it's not good. Basically, everyone doesn't make it back for more than like a couple games.
Yeah, I'm of the mind that the Red Wings probably are a team that's going to make the playoffs this year. I think they've been good, and I don't see, I mean, New Jersey may be the only team that I see making a move farther up. They're currently 4 points behind Detroit in the wild card race. But I don't know if Patrick Kane's going to, I think Detroit's good enough with what they have. Like, this is a little bit of a, like I said, no risk. If it doesn't work out, you've still got a very good team. You're not banking on Patrick Kane to provide you points in the playoffs. So I don't know how much of a role he's going to play. And if he does, it's only just, you know, a little bit of a cherry on top for the Red Wings.
Let me find this stat here. Yeah, there we go. Bob Wischusen, great ESPN voice of NHL hockey, put this out at the start of November. If your team is in a playoff spot by Thanksgiving, you got nearly an 80% chance of reaching the postseason. Detroit's there, so the the stats are in their favor, the numbers are in their favor. And you mentioned New Jersey, and we've got to keep in mind that's a metropolitan division team. Detroit on the Atlantic side really only has Tampa Bay to compete with, but Tampa's already sharing the wild card with them. So, I mean, unless we get a surprise, it seems that Detroit would hang on to it.
Well, Tampa did just get Andre Vasilevsky back.
That's true. That's true.
And the Devils are going to get Jack Hughes back at some point as well, too. They're actually currently in a playoff spot by points percentage right now. I know it says they're sixth in the Metro. But
so then you're talking about...
decently ahead of Philly and Pittsburgh and slightly ahead of the Islanders.
Mm. So then you're talking about trying to make sure you can jump Washington. Because Washington's been a little all over the place to start the season.
I'm shocked to this year, see for sure. them in that
they
spot
got
right
to
now.
An atrocious first four or five games, and everyone's like, all right, it's over for them after last season. And here they are. They've been one of the hottest teams in the league.
I mean, they
last
looked
month or so.
Horrible last month. When I watched them play the Canadiens. Horrible. As like this team is might be the worst team in the league, and now they're in the playoffs right now. I don't know if it lasts, but yeah, good for Washington.
A lot of one goal games. A lot of close wins, yeah. I see
and,
in there.
And for the Capitals, that's with Alex Ovechkin only having 5 goals so far this year. Wow. That's it in 20 games.
Is it time we change the tone on the will he catch Wayne Gretzky conversation? Because I feel like there was a bubble last year, and I know I'm kind of going off the beaten path here, but I feel like there was a bubble last year where everyone was like, oh, he can actually do this. And with the slow start he's gotten off to this year, it seems like that noise has kind of quieted down a little bit. I don't know. Just me.
I think we need to go a little bit longer. I mean, you're talking about a guy who has a career low in a full season of 82 games of 33 goals. And every other...
Yeah, that's not to be taken for nothing.
And that's the only time... Sorry, 32. And he's only been below 40 twice. So he's definitely earned some benefit of the doubt, I think, that he'll turn this slow start around. He's only scored on 6.5% of his shots. Like, even if he's not the player he once was, that's going to regress positively.
Yeah, I would imagine
like
so,
10%.
Too. I don't know.
I mean, you would have to think.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. I think we gotta give it a month or two more.
Yeah. We also had a trade as well a couple days ago. Nikita Zadorov going to Vancouver for a third and a fifth from Calgary. I'm surprised that the Flames got so little for trading him so early. To me, there's no rush to trade a player like that for agent at the end of the year. You know, if you're either holding on to that player for a bidding war, hopefully at the trade deadline, or you're moving him for an exorbitant price in the here and now. And it feels like the Flames settled for the worst possible option, which was moving him now for a pretty middling return.
Yeah, it seemed to me like Calgary fans were a little disappointed with what they got back.
I'm surprised they didn't get at least a second.
Yeah. For Vancouver, it's just kind of a weird trade. You know, I was reading up on it a little earlier, and Thomas Drantz, who's a good beat writer for the
Canucks. Yeah, I saw his headline that he was a weird fit.
Yeah, he said it's a weird fit because they're loaded on the left side D, and they need right side D.
I think Zadorov can play the right, maybe. Like, he's a left-handed shot. He's listed on Cap Friendly as a left and right defenseman.
So maybe if you're the Flames, you're still not happy about that, right? But like maybe that's your justification for why you didn't get more. It wasn't a perfect fit in Vancouver. But for me, I think it's a little bit, then
why move him?
I don't know, right? If you're not getting, I think that's where a lot of NHL GMs are at. If you're not getting what you want, you don't move a player, right? That being said, I think it's great for Vancouver to, you kind of show you for real, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and they're hoping to fight off some of that PDO regression from earlier in the year, hoping that move helps out for them as well. For Calgary right now, obviously they missed the playoffs last year. They've actually been going on a bit of a run, 6-3-1 in their last 10. They're actually at fourth in the Pacific Division. The Western Conference is definitely the weaker conference by far so far this season, especially the Pacific. It's very top-heavy.
Yeah.
Do we think this is the beginning of a larger fire sale for them? Because they've got a lot of guys who are free agents very soon. Elias Lindholm at the end of this year, Noah Hanifin, Chris Tanev next year, Yegor Sharangovich, and Andrew Mangiapane. They've got some decisions to make.
I think it might be.
That idea makes me so sad.
No,
that idea makes me like this is a team that has been competitive really since the start of Johnny Gaudreau's time there, right? And then like he leaves and Tkachuk leaves, and it's just, you know, nobody's willing to invest in Calgary.
It's so weird too because I think a lot of people like the moves they made in the wake of those guys leaving. They get Jonathan Huberdeau, they get Mackenzie Weegar, they get Nazem Kadri. And it just hasn't seemed to gel at all. Now with a second coach since the big offseason moves from a couple summers ago, so you can't really blame that factor necessarily. Huberdeau, who I really thought would bounce back this year, is still looking to get going. He's got 15 points in 23 games. This is a guy who had 115 a couple seasons ago and had been a point-a-game player for four straight seasons before that. So it's just very weird to me what's happened in Calgary.
It's a hard time to be a Calgary Flames fan. I mean, I would struggle with the idea that players don't want to. It feels like players don't want to stay, right? Yeah. Even the ones that, like, I think for Calgary, right, the biggest leverage for whether they're gonna have a fire sale or not is like, are those guys gonna want to come back? You know, if those guys don't want to come back, they don't have a choice.
Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap the show up early because I have to get to my one credit Friday class.
Woo!
So I'm going to sprint across campus through the rain to do that. We'll be back next week for sure, I believe. I don't know when you guys are heading back for
Friday.
For Christmas. Okay.
Yeah. I think I have an exam, an 8 a.m. exam Friday morning.
I head back on the 17th.
So Ryan Murphy is going to rush through this Friday exam so he can be done at 9 a.m.
Me and Jacob Irons, technical producer Jacob Irons, have that exam.
Oh, let's go. Oh,
yeah. B-Levy.
B-Levy.
Let's go. Oh, I
Shout out B-Levy.
Yeah.
Five Funny Irish.
All right. We'll wrap it there. Tyler Reedy, Ryan Murphy, and our technical hero, Jacob Irons, and guest caller as well. I'm Andrew McGinnis. Have a great week, and of course, beat Michigan.